ladies, and gentlemen, welcome to another exciting edition of Monday Motivation. Hi everyone, this is Rabbi Garfinkel of Project 613 here in Chicago. And boy oh boy, Pesach Passover is in the air. So much is happening right now with Project 613. Before we get to everything, please like and subscribe to Monday Motivation with Rabbi Garfinkel. We appreciate it. And we appreciate all the people out there listening. Okay, we have just tons of going on. Thank God, Project 613. Last week we had Rabbi Yaakov Denishevsky. Highly recommend his new book, Attached, based on attachment theory and also the Hebrew concept of dveikus, of connecting to Hashem. He is a fantastic speaker, a very sought-after therapist and rabbi as well. Really star, top-notch. This is the high-quality content that we are bringing to young professionals in downtown Chicago, and we are very proud of that. All right, this week we have an event with our cohort, our group, our mentors and mentees, sponsored by Olami, the worldwide network of which we are a part, and really, truly incredible what is happening with these mentors and mentees, our young professionals from Project 613. We've matched with mentors in the community and beyond in their fields, and they talk Torah, they talk life, and it really is something amazing to behold. So that's coming up this week. All right. I would like to tell everyone that if you are listening now, you have to listen to the end. This podcast is a little bit uncharted territory. I'm going into a few non-Torah-based sources in the sense that we're going to talk about things that usually I just go straight for Torah. And that's my mojo. There's something so important that's happening in our world right now that every Jew, every human being, but in particular, every Jew needs to know about it. And we see it happening all over the world. And we're going to start with a non-Jewish example of it. And then we are going to go to a Jewish example of this phenomenon. And then we're going to explain what the concept is and end with, I hope, two stories that are so inspiring. So if it sounds like Rabbi is on a rant, I might be. But we're going to try to keep it positive, and we're going to end very uplifting of what it means, really, to be Jewish. All right, you ready? Fasten seatbelts. Here we go. And now, we are going to talk about chutzpah. Yes, chutzpah. What in the world is chutzpah? Well, if you look up a dictionary definition of chutzpah, it says extreme self-confidence or audacity. Okay, well, that's, you know, technically true and correct, but it's not as good as the classic Yiddish definition. The classic Yiddish definition of chutzpah is a son who kills his parents and claims leniency from the judge because he's an orphan. That is crazy. Now, speaking of parents, I have no ideas of that sort. God forbid, just the opposite. I want to be careful and sensitive because my two biggest fans, surprise, surprise, are my mom and my dad. And we're going to talk about my alma mater, Stanford University. They actually told me about what had happened and I looked it up. And I want to be very forthright. I am very grateful for the education that they worked so hard for. So when I critique Stanford, it is certainly not a knock on them. They put my eldest sister went to Brown University. My middle sister went through Penn, University of Pennsylvania, Wharton undergrad. And then I, last but not least, went to Stanford. I had a very powerful motivation throughout high school to do well in school and every extra activity and all the tests. My male ego would not let my two sisters beat me in college acceptances. All right, it was really for the sake of heaven and my male ego. All right, anyway, so I am particularly grateful for my Stanford degree because here I am, the Orthodox rabbi with my beard, my glasses, my kippah, my tzitzis, and clearly Jewish appearance. And when I meet young professionals and they make assumptions, or meet anyone and they make assumptions about me. We get in a conversation and colleges come up, and I just happen to drop the street creds that I went to Stanford University, and then all of a sudden I have a heksher, a total kosher certification, but at least it's levels the playing field. So in that way, I am grateful for having my degree. Now, to my alma mater. Here we go. Stanford University Law School, the Federalist Society of the Stanford Law School. Stanford Law School is currently ranked second in the nation. They go back and forth, 1 and 2 with Yale. Okay, anyway, here we go. Judge Kyle Duncan of the United States Court of Appeals was invited by the Federalist Society and to speak. Now, it happens to be that good old Judge Kyle Duncan is one of the most conservative judges on the most conservative of the appellate courts. They opposed same-sex marriage. They really came out, not quote-unquote the popular trending opinion when it comes to a lot of the issues of the day. Let's put it that way. And there was a very interesting greeting that he got. Now, I am quoting from an article written by Jeff Jacoby, who is with the Boston Globe, and he quotes David Latt, a legal blogger who happened to cover the incident. And this is what David Latt said. Quote, "The opportunity to hear from a sitting federal appellate judge about his court's jurisprudence is why students go to places like Stanford Law School," end quote. Meaning that it doesn't matter that you disagree with this judge, but this judge is a big deal. In other words, you could disagree with everything he says and stands for, but he's a powerful judge, and he's exactly someone that if you really want to know and learn the craft and the profession of law, you must hear from someone like this. However, what happened was the following. But the students, and I quote from the article, "But the students who came to Duncan's appearance weren't interested in hearing him, but in silencing him." Latt recounts what happened. When the Federalist Society president opened the proceedings, he was jeered between sentences. Judge Duncan then took the stage, and from the beginning of his speech, the protesters booed and heckled continually. For about 10 minutes, the judge tried to give his planned remarks, but the protesters simply yelled over him with exclamations like, quote, "You couldn't get into Stanford. You're not welcome here. We hate you. Why do you hate black people? Leave and never come back. We hate Fed Society students." That's Federal Society students. "Blank them. I can't use that word on a podcast. They don't belong here either." So he tried to quiet them down, and they didn't. They got even worse. Okay, and then here it is. The social justice warrior, Tyrion Steinbach, who is Stanford Law's Associate Dean for Diversity, Equity, and Inclusion. She'd been in the whole room the whole time. She had done nothing to restrain the disruptors. She came to the podium and listen to what she says. So the judge actually asked to speak to her privately. Let's be the big people in the room and figure a way out of this. But she refused. She took out a prepared text and she laced into Duncan. She said that the work of this judge has caused harm, that his speech feels abhorrent and literally denies the humanity of people. She accused him of engaging in absolute disenfranchisement of people's rights. She goes on and on the pain that he caused in the division by even speaking here, i.e. that his words are violent, basically, is what she's saying. And she said, "I look out and I don't ask what is going on here. I look out and say, I'm glad this is going on here." So there were about 100 of these hecklers. And after that, they protested. They left the room and they jeered at the professor as they left. Good riddance. Now, it's beyond belief. The chutzpah of these people, and it's the hypocrisy of a DEI, diversity, equity, and inclusion associate dean is saying she's in diversity, equity, and inclusion. What hypocrisy? For whom? Only people who agree with her. It is so transparent how hypocritical she and the rest of the cadre of these people, and I've seen this on campus and in life time, countless time and time again, that it's equity and inclusion for those people up into a certain point. But if you disagree with us, you are excluded, and you're excluded violently and vehemently. I wish all the Jewish donors who pour millions and possibly and for sure billions into these academic quote-unquote institutions would know what they're supporting, because I doubt that they do. Now, this is nothing new. I guarantee you I will be the only one quoting this source when they're talking about this incident, because this is actually from my textbook when I was a freshman at Stanford University. Listen to this. This is the Western Heritage history book. I'm sure they would have this history book burned by now because it's all the white man history. Sorry, but it was. And it was by Professor Kagan. I remember him well. The fourth edition, the description of the University of Paris in the 13th century. So in the 1200s was really the beginning of a lot of university life. And this description is so brutal of what university was like. Basically, they say that no one went there to acquire knowledge. They only went to acquire fame or to gain potential to go for money. There was no concept of learning what we say, lishma, for the sake of knowledge. They would be totally intolerant of other cultures, okay? And finally, they talk about the faculty. And the faculty was filled with being condescending not only to the students, but to their fellow faculty. And the students were chutzpahdik to the faculty. And it goes on and on and on for those who are interested on page 300 of the history book. And so you see it right from the get-go. When education is all about me and my knowledge, and you extricate the Almighty, and you extricate a higher authority, you end up it being only about me, myself, and I. And then you really end up treating people awfully. But as we've mentioned here a few times, we are not surprised that as we approach the end of days, yes, you heard it here, the end of days as we know it in the year 6000, we are in 5, 7, 8, 3, yes, folks, 217 years left till the guaranteed on-time delivery, God, of the Messiah's arrival. We can do it before if we get our act together. But there's an amazing sources in the Talmud, in Sota, Tractate of Sota, Daf Mem Tes Amud Beis, and in Sanhedrin, Tzadi Zayin Amud Aleph. And these are unbelievable Gemaras that talk about what is it going to be like when the Messiah comes? What is the environment in which the world will reach its final rectification, meaning its final tikkun, its final fixing? What is the soil of the plant that is going to grow Mashiach, Messiah? And the Gemara says it in two different ways, and Sotet says it in the Aramaic, Chutzpah Yaske. Chutzpah yaske, chutzpah will increase. And in Sanhedrin, it says it in the Hebrew. And it says that ha'azus tarbe, that azus, the chutzpah, will increase. And what does it mean? It means that the social fabric of society is going to decay. Just the rabbis give an analogy. Just like when you put a seed into the ground, the seed itself rots. The seed itself rots. And just at that moment where you think that it's all lost and there's no hope, boom, the seed bursts forth with new life and a new plant. That is exactly the fertile ground of Mashiach. When you see things breaking down in terms of a tremendous amount of chutzpah, where there's no respect for elders, and there's no respect for the truth, and truth itself, the Gemara in Sanhedrin says, will be vanished. Okay? And so now, I don't expect more from a university in Paris in the 13th century, and I don't expect more from my alma mater, but I do expect more from my fellow Jewish people. And I don't know if any of you are following this, but there is a whole brouhaha going on in Israel right now about the legal reforms that are happening in the current government. For those people who don't know, Israel has no constitution. Why? Because the founders couldn't agree on a constitution. It would be impossible. They can barely even scrape a coalition government together because Israel was and is a conglomeration of very different types of Jews who have very different types of interests. And so therefore, a constitution was impossible because it never would have been ratified. And so therefore, the laws are a little loosey-goosey in terms of checks and balances. And there was a Supreme Court justice named Aaron Barak, who basically 20-ish years ago, he was the head of the Supreme Court, basically usurped tons of power. He said the Israeli Supreme Court should be the most powerful entity in society. And every law expert will tell you that the Supreme Court in Israel is the most powerful Supreme Court in any democracy on planet Earth. It was the final arbiter of every law. Even the Knesset, the equivalent of the Congress, would pass a law or suggest a law, and Barak's court would actually edit it. Could you imagine the Supreme Court editing legislation? And I have a student who is brilliant, who happened to get his PhD in law from University of Chicago. Not so bad, not too shabby. And he tells me that literally he cannot say one word about this process, about the Israel legal reforms, how needed they are to bring balance to Israeli society, because all of the judges are elected by the judges. There's no Senate or Congress or whatever to put it forth and be ratified and passed and confirmed. The judges nominate and confirm themselves. So he said, I literally cannot say anything against the legal system right now, even though it desperately needs to be reformed. That sounds like democracy, right? No. So it sounds like an autocracy of the Supreme Court. And therefore, the new government wants to have reforms. Now, the opposite argument is that what the new government is going to do, it's going to take away civil rights. That's assuming that any government can stay in power for more than a year or two, because they always collapse. And there has not been a government that has lasted for 4 years in a very long time. And so therefore, what happens? Instead of Israelis thinking about it and saying, yeah, maybe some compromise, maybe the Supreme Court has gone too far, they launch into massive protests, hundreds of thousands of Israelis on the streets and doing all sorts of things, and now getting violent. They're literally attacking people, attacking ministers of the government. And if you would ask these people to explain the legal background, why there needs to be reform, most of them would have absolutely zero idea. Why are they there? Chutzpah. Chutzpah is why they're there. Chutzpah, because they believe and they're gullible of the leaders who have the greatest chutzpah to say that this is the end of democracy. It would not be the end of democracy. The yellow journalism that has come out of Israel with politicians coming onto American airwaves and lambasting and totally eviscerating their fellow Jews in Israel for supporting this, airing the dirty laundry of the Jewish people to the non-Jewish nations of the world, you now have companies who are divesting from Israel. Jewish Israeli companies saying we're leaving Israel. Very big ones. The chutzpah. You know why? Because we here on the front lines of Jewish identity for the past 5-7 years have been fighting tooth and nail against BDS boycott, divest, Movement and sanctions, the BDS movement, which boycott, divest, and sanctions against Israel. The non-Jews have been trying to get Israeli companies boycotted and to leave Israel. Guess what? We're doing it to ourselves. We have a self-inflicted BDS movement. But the chutzpah gets even greater because several hundred elite IDF intelligent veterans are have threatened to boycott their reserve duty. These are people who are essential services for Israel's safety. And they're thinking of boycotting because this legislation is not going the way they want. You can protest. Bavakasha, you can voice your concerns, but you can't use violence and you cannot threaten or damage a fellow Jew individually, personally, or nationally, or militarily. These people have chutzpah. What happened to Ve'ahavta l'reach kamocha, to love your neighbors yourself? What happened to the Jewish people and the great Zionist dream and vision to settle the land of Israel? And as soon as there's one piece of legislation you don't like, you're taking your company out, you're going on non-Jewish television to rank out your fellow Jew who you disagree with? Are you so short-sighted? Don't you remember how the Romans got into the land of Israel because two Jewish kings were disagreeing with each other and one of them invited the Romans to settle the dispute and that led directly to the destruction of the Second Temple that we're still suffering from? Chutzpah. Chutzpah. And now you know why I warned you that I might be on a rant. But I want to finish to describe to you, what does it really mean to be Jewish? It doesn't mean to boycott your fellow Jew. I want to share with you two amazing stories. One, Rav Moshe Feinstein, one of the probably the greatest sage, Jewish sage ever to live in the shores of America, the greatest posek, halachic decisor in the last 100 years for sure. And he was also known as a tremendous tzaddik, a righteous person. And one of the students was so excited, he finally got a turn to drive Rav Moshe to a wedding. And he was so excited, he brought Rav Moshe into the back of the car. And then he got to the wedding hall and he, you know, took Rav Moshe out and you know, let him out. And he slammed the door and drove off. And Rav Moshe turned to someone who was with him there and said, "Please, I need to go to the hospital." And he said, "Why?" And Rav Moshe had showed him that this student in his zeal had slammed the door on his fingers and they were bleeding and broken. But he didn't emit a word of pain. He did not cry out. Why? Because he did not want to hurt the feelings of this student who was so happy that he could drive him. He was in agony and pain, but he kept quiet because he cared about another Jew. Now, I want to tell you a story. You want to know what it means to be Jewish, and I know we're over time, but I'm going to tell you this story anyway. This story is a story about one of my daughters. One of my daughters and her friends have an amazing group that, and it's the high school girls where we go to, and I'm going to give it a shout out. It's called Beis Yaakov. Beis Yaakov High School of Chicago. When there is a wedding of a kala of a bride, either maybe a convert or a balas tshuva or someone from out of town that do not have a lot of people to dance with them. You imagine a kala, a bride on her wedding day. She's so excited to celebrate, but for whatever circumstances, there are not a lot of people there to support her. That these girls go, they find out about these weddings. In fact, they have one this week coming up and they're going to go dance. But now listen to this. Listen, it's amazing. That they could end the story right there and that would be amazing. But listen to this. Listen to this. My daughter explained to me that they don't go in 20, 30 at a time. They go in subtly. 2, 3, 1, 2, slowly. Why? Because if 50 girls would go in and start dancing at once, it would make the bride feel like she is a chesed case, like she needs it, like she's a nebuch, as we say, like she doesn't have her own friends. But folks, Do you see? And so therefore they slowly filter. Not only did they go to the wedding, they slowly filter in so that they'll have this sensitivity to this bride, that she will not only have people dancing at her wedding, but they'll be dancing in a way that's compassionate to her feelings. Do you see the difference? Do you see the difference between a selfish, secular, totally me-first education and a Torah education? Do you see the chutzpah and do you see the elevation? Folks, when we look out in the world and we see a Stanford University and we see these protests in Israel becoming violent, non-violent protests is fine, but when we see the chutzpah, we have to respond. We've got to step up and be like Rav Moshe and be like these Beis Yaakov high school girls and show extra sensitivity to our fellow Jew. And that way, God willing, we will bring Messiah speedily in our days. God bless. We'll see you next week right here for another exciting edition of Monday Motivation.